Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast, coming to you on a Sunday morning, recapping week one of college football, our college football playback. As you see there on the screen, I'm joined by my co-host, Kyle Barber. Kyle, how are you this morning?
Going on, Bubba. How are you on this? What it is what it is. Kind of week one of college football, pieced together, handful of games. It ain't normal, but at least it's football, Bubba.
Yeah, it definitely isn't normal. Nothing's been normal for the last five-plus months, but never did I think I'd be so excited to see six college football games on opening weekend, but that was the case. And what were some of the main games you watched yesterday? The three on ESPN, Marshall at 1, and then 4:30 with SMU and Texas State, and then the 8 o'clock game with Memphis and Arkansas State. And those were the three primary ones that I was able to tune in on.
Yeah, and CBS Sports Network had Army and Middle, and ESPN 3 had a couple CUSA games, UTEP and Stephen F. Austin and North Texas and Houston Baptist. I tried to watch a little of everything. I would say best game of the day was Texas State and SMU from a competitive standpoint. Texas State hung right with SMU. I think that had more to do with one SMU – offense not executing at 100% yet, and they still don't have a defense, Bubba, because unless Texas State's made a dramatic improvement on offense, and maybe they have, they didn't have any offense last year, particularly a running game, and they were able to move the ball on SMU. And then the primetime game, Arkansas State Memphis was competitive. Memphis ended up pulling away, and then we'll break down the game to more depth, but I thought that was two good football teams. Watching Memphis and Arkansas State, I think they were both talented, good football teams, and I think what you saw is the difference between an upper echelon team in the American and an upper echelon team in the Sun Belt, and eventually Memphis pulled away, and a good debut for Silverfield there at Memphis.
Yeah, some of the things kind of moving away from the games themselves specifically, but just the games on a whole, going back to Thursday night, I know I saw this occur, and I know it occurred yesterday. I don't recall which games, but specifically Thursday night's game with UAB and Central Arkansas. In the first half of that game, we had heard from Coach Houston several weeks ago as far as the electronic whistles and in the Pirates' first scrimmage on what an issue that caused. And he said the officials have some things to figure out, much like us as coaches and players and everybody. But we've certainly seen that through the first few games now. And that UAB game, UAB was in a situation, they were playing defense down in the red zone, maybe got caught in a personnel issue, a matchup problem. Coach Clark went running down the sideline, calling a timeout at the last second. The whistles were either not blown or not blown loudly enough, and the UAB linebacker about decapitated the UCA quarterback, but fortunately he was not flagged because they knew it was clearly their mistake. What are your thoughts on that? And, what have you seen in that regard pertaining to the electronic whistles?
Well, I think the problem is if Bill Clark was running around trying to call a timeout, one official probably got it and blew the whistle. And then another whistle, how they'll blow the whistle and other officials will start blowing. If one official blows that electronic whistle and he's kind of far away from the action, you're not going to hear it. And I think that's the problem. They need to come up with a better system. There was also an incident in the Southern Miss game where the running back was kind of tackled, but I didn't think it's for a progressive stop. And he lateraled the ball back to the quarterback. The quarterback runs in there for a touchdown, and that was a third down play. And they ended up having to kick a field goal because they said for a progress stop, no score. I never heard a whistle. Even on the replay, I never heard a whistle. My buddy, who's a USM fan, who was in the stadium, said he never heard a whistle in the stadium. So, I don't know. These electronic whistles are an ongoing issue and have reared their head in a couple games already. And I don't know if they can do something to make them louder. I don't understand why we can't. I mean, I get the – what they're saying is putting that whistle in their mouth and blowing it, and it may cause like a saliva to go in the air with the officials, but and they're wearing their mask. I don't know. The electronic whistles seem to be a problem. They gotta come up with a way where they'll be a little louder.
For sure. I mean, you take a look at it right now, and this will be a nice segue. We'll talk more about the attendance and what we saw around some of those venues yesterday and on Thursday as well. But in terms of attendance, I mean, you take a look at it, some of these larger venues like in Alabama or Tennessee or LSU, where there may be 25, 30, 35,000 in attendance, even though it's extremely limited, relatively speaking. I mean, that's certainly enough people where these electronic whistles, I mean, they're having issues with them when there's either no fans or 4 or 5, maybe 12,000 at the most, as we'll get to. But I mean, I just don't know. I mean, if you're having an issue now, I mean, what about when you have 30,000 screaming Tennessee fans?
Yeah, and I didn't notice it during the Memphis game last night, any issues with the electronic whistles. They only had about 5,000 people in the 60,000 seat Liberty Bowl, but they were pumping in artificial noise with that 5,000. And I didn't notice any issues in that game. I don't know. That's a good question. When you talk about a Neyland Stadium and you're going to have 30,000 people in there because that place holds over 100,000, will you be able to hear those electronic whistles? And if anybody's going to make sure it's right and get it right, it'll be the SEC. They're going to figure out a way to make those electronic whistles work if they have to hook them into the damn PA system somehow.
Yeah, for sure. Now, as far as attendance this week and the 8 games that we're going to be talking about in a moment, and we'll go through each individually just in chronological order, starting with Thursday's games. But as far as attendance, the top attendance I saw, I believe, was actually at UAB, oddly enough. I think it's 12,700 and some. And then wow. Marshall yesterday, of course, Edwards Stadium, a much more intimate venue compared to Legion Field, which seats about 72,000 now. Edwards Stadium at Marshall is a little over 38,000. And they had, I think, roughly 12,000 tickets distributed. So
yeah, it was good at Marshall. It looked like even more than 12,000 people, to be honest with you. Not accusing anybody of anything. I'm just saying how it looked. So, I mean, honestly, Marshall's attendance has been down in recent years. It didn't look that much different than a Marshall game. I mean, a regular Marshall game. I think probably they've been getting a little over 20,000 recently, maybe 25,000. But honestly, on TV, did it look more than 12,000 people to you? Because it did to me.
I was like you when it came on, and especially with the way, even though Doc Holliday and that staff has had a tremendous amount of success there, really, I think one losing season in about the last 7 or 8, and most of those years they're winning 8 games or 9 games, maybe as many as 10+. But for whatever reason, with attendance across college football has sagged, and maybe that's what's going on up in Huntington as well. Because I remember when they made that move, and even back in their FCS days, and they were packing Edwards Stadium, and now it's nothing for them to have 20 or 25,000, even when they are good and playing somebody that's good. So yeah, it didn't look too much different than what it had been, and definitely not a bad atmosphere under the circumstances in Huntington.
Yeah, I don't know. As far as their attendance issues, you know, we'll touch on that just a second. I don't know if it's a situation where, you know, when they were the FCS level, when they joined the MAC, they were winning championships and they were dominant. In their Conference USA days, they've had good years, but not too many championships. I don't know if that's part of it. There was a lot of electricity and national attention around Marshall back in those days of winning the MAC every year. And they were kind of the Boise State of the day. And I think maybe that has something to do with it. I've often wondered if it wouldn't benefit them to go back to the MAC. Their fans don't seem too interested in it, surprisingly, particularly with Conference USA revenue going down and the MAC revenue actually going up a little. I think the idea of the Tuesday and Wednesday night games aren't too appealing that the MAC's doing these days. But, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if Marshall's attendance ever goes back up. Kind of a strange deal there. But nonetheless, yesterday – in Huntington, the crowd didn't look bad on TV.
Yeah,
here, great performance. I guess I don't know if we're going to break down that game right now, but they destroyed Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah, they certainly did. 59-0, and we will get to it here in just a few minutes. But as far as Marshall's concerned and what you mentioned about the MAC, I was listening to a podcast, App State podcast, the Black and Gold podcast here a few days ago, and they were talking about that add-on game they have up at Marshall here on September 19th. And they were saying that some Marshall fans were just talking about how they were glad that they were getting App State instead of a MAC team, because App State, under normal circumstances, you know, would bring somebody, so that they would like to see this game be scheduled in future years where the App fans can really travel.
Yeah, and that's another thing. There's not too many MAC schools that have a fan base. Ohio, the Bobcats, I think do a pretty good job of drawing around 20,000 people most games, and that's actually a rival of Marshall, the Ohio Bobcats. I think Toledo can draw some crowds when they're playing on weekends. You know, that's a program there. We're going to talk about MAC attendance. Toledo's had an excellent program for years, and, you know, you would think they'd be selling out left and right. Same with NIU. NIU, you know, they even in their BCS year, you know, they couldn't draw flies. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me why none of these MAC schools, and I guess that's why they don't mind doing the weeknight games. But these MAC schools that have had success, it's really crazy to me that none of them draw. Western Michigan, I guess, maybe is a MAC school that has a fan base that comes out, Bubba?
Yeah, it seems like they, of course, when P.J. Fleck was there and they were making that run to the Cotton Bowl that year when they played Wisconsin, I feel certain that they were packing it out pretty well. I think Broncos – I'm trying to remember the name of their stadium. If it's Broncos Stadium, I think I'm mixing that up with what Boise State was back in the day. But yeah, the MAC is certainly hurting on attendance because of all those Wednesday night games, Tuesday night games, and so forth. But kind of moving on, one last point, or a couple points as far as the attendance, a couple other CUSA venues. We talked about Marshall down at Southern Miss. What was it? They had 6 or 7, and then also UTEP last night had about 6 or 7,000.
Yeah, I was thinking Southern Miss had around 9, but it may have been 6 or 7. I don't know.
I never officially saw the number. I was basing that off of what our friend James Smith, diehard Southern Miss fan, was saying, but I never saw the official number.
They were pretty loud on TV, and I don't think they were using any artificial noise. If you know anything about The Rock, it I think it holds around 38,000, 37,000, something like that. And not including the end zone, because there's a lot of seats in their end zone. They built a nice end zone facility a few years ago. But the stands are right on top of the field. So whoever is in that stadium, you're going to be able to hear them. I mean, they sit right on top of the field. And they were able to make some noise. That's another thing. If we get into Memphis, I think they had 4,000 or 5,000, and they were very spaced out. The Liberty Bowl looked empty, and they pumped in some artificial noise along with their fans.
And also up at Army, Army did not allow any of the public in. They did have 4,300 cadets. And then, oddly enough, I don't know if this has to do with just the Annapolis, Maryland area or the state of Maryland or what, but tomorrow night for Navy and BYU, unless something has changed in the last few days, there will be no midshipmen in attendance.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that's a situation where Army kind of was able to kind of do their own thing and tell the state of New York to suck it because they are Army, and maybe Maryland wasn't given, or maybe Navy didn't take that same approach to the state of Maryland. I don't know, but. Unfortunately, there will be no fans, including the midshipmen, in attendance tomorrow night in Annapolis. So that will be our first taste, Bubba, of what we're going to get here in the great state of North Carolina, at East Carolina, and the ACC schools also in App State. Tomorrow night, Navy BYU, unless something changes, will be the first game played with absolutely no fans.
And like you're saying, App State is hosting Charlotte. I believe that game's on ESPN2, maybe like 1 or 2 o'clock next Saturday. So look forward to watching that one. It was a shootout last year. It'll be interesting to see how that one unfolds with Sean Clark's debut. Obviously, he coached the bowl game as head coach, but first season that he has been the head coach entering, and also Will Healy on the tremendous job he seems to be doing down at Charlotte, as they say, with Club Lit.
Yeah. yeah, okay. That's not what I say, but when I see that CLT. But anyway, I
keep that pronunciation to yourself.
Yeah, Club Lit. I put those letters together, boys and girls. It's kind of funny, you know, who would have thought Charlotte and App playing next weekend live on ESPN2 while we're having our last scrimmage of fall camp. Kind of strange.
Speaking of the Pirates, you referenced what we'll experience. The announcement came out in the last several days that there, as expected, would be no fans in attendance for the UCF game on September 26th. Just at this point, we're obviously just hoping that game can be played. But Holt Naylor's East Carolina quarterback, was chiming in yesterday on Twitter, just seeing, you know, 12,000 fans in attendance in different games around the country, saying, "I hope Roy Cooper in the powers that be in the state of North Carolina are watching this so they can adjust things and figure it out and find a way to at least get, you know, the players' families in and some others." Because, there's no way in a 51,000 seat venue, like Coach Houston was saying on Thursday post practice, you sense his frustration. He said, 51,000 seats, we got to figure it out.
Well, what you hope, and it may not help us for the, well, there, we still have some time between now and UCF. What you hope is in the next 2 weeks, you hear nothing about any jumps and spikes in cases in these states that are allowing fans in. And, Governor Cooper has decided to, not have bars open because, you know, supposedly certain states, that's why their numbers spiked, was because allowing bars to be open. So if you see no spike in numbers in these states that allow limited attendance for football games, by using that same logic, therefore, there should be no reason by the 26th why you can't change your stance and allow at least, even if it's just 10%, Bubba, 5,000 people. You can have the family members of the students, of the players, rather, in the stadium. And then, you know, whoever ranks highest in priority points, you know, 5,000 people can make some noise. And yeah, and then you add in some artificial noise with it, you can create an atmosphere. What I've noticed with these stadiums who get up to 10 or 12,000 people in there, if it's a good game, it sounds fine. I mean, it doesn't sound like 50,000 people, but it's definitely some noise. So it'd be great. I know Mike Houston was saying, you know, at least allow us to have like 500 people in there for the family members of the student athletes. I'm going to be quite honest with you. If I was East Carolina or North Carolina or North Carolina State, I'd just do it. I would have the family members of the players at that game, 500 people, and see if boo is said, because I don't think there would be. In a 50,000 seat stadium, you space them out, I don't even know if it would get noticed. I mean, just think about it. I mean, I would tell all 500. I would say all 500 of them are members of media. Media is going to be a lot of the games. They're, give each one of them a pad and paper and say they're media.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting to see how things unfold. Without any further ado, let's go ahead and start taking a look at these ball games from week one, starting on Thursday night at Legion Field. We've talked about it, and anybody that's followed college football closely over the last several years know what a tremendous job Bill Clark has done at UAB, both before and after the dropping of that program. And what they've done since they brought things back has just been tremendous. And this one was a little bit more lopsided than the score would indicate. It was 45-21 at one point before they ended up winning 45-35, as you see there on the bottom of the screen. But what were some of your takeaways of this? One of the things that really stands out to me, Kyle, I heard this number on the broadcast. UAB set a Conference USA record with this win, 19th straight at Legion Field.
UAB has been dominant since they came back from the death. Well, I was going to say the death penalty. They gave themselves a death penalty, the administration at the time. But UAB has been dominant since they came back. It's kind of like that new Coke thing. When Coca-Cola brought in new Coke, it made Coca-Cola Classic more popular than ever. Maybe that was their idea all along. Hey, we're going to take this away. Then it's going to come back and people are going to love it. My biggest takeaway is UAB ain't UAB anymore. UAB is a good football program, and they're building a new stadium downtown. The city of Birmingham is, and they're going to have a nice little 40,000 seat stadium to play in, which will help. You know, if you're drawing 20,000-25,000 in a 40,000 seat stadium, that doesn't look bad. So, UAB is a program that it's nothing like it was when the Pirates were playing them. They are an up and coming program. Bill Clark, will have UAB competing for a Conference USA championship. Central Arkansas, I watched them play twice now, and they never quit, man. That's what I noticed about them. Against Austin Peay, they started slow, came back, won the game. Against UAB, UAB would get up big, and then Central Arkansas would fight back, and as they did at the end of the game, to make it competitive. And so hats off to their coaching staff. They get the most out of those players, and they don't have no quit in them.
It was 28-7, like you were mentioning. There at the end of the first half, then they got a offensive touchdown, then a like 35-yard fumble return, and all of a sudden it's 28-21 at halftime. And you're thinking, hey, is the upset going to happen? But and then UAB scored 17 unanswered before UCA tacked on those two touchdowns late in the game. I know, looking at some of the numbers, Spencer Brown for UAB had a 100-yard day on the ground, finished with 127 yards on 24 carries. So a tremendous game for him. And I know UAB this week, they will be traveling down for another Thursday night game, the second of three straight Thursday night national television games for UAB. They will be down in South Beach and taking on Miami and seeing if they can upset the Hurricanes.
Yeah, Thursday night kickoff on the ACC network. UAB has that advantage of playing a game before Miami. We'll see if they can get off to a fast start while the Canes find their legs. It could be an interesting game. Miami really sucked at the end of last year. They were not playing good football. They lost late in the year to Florida International and then lost the bowl game to La Tech. So they're used to losing to CUSA schools. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I'm gonna be watching that on the ACC network.
And we'll certainly keep an eye on UCA from the standpoint. That was the team that played two games in literally about 5 days because they had played on Saturday, but that game on Saturday was a 9 p.m. kickoff, or at least our time, I guess it was 8 Central, but nonetheless, it was a late kickoff, and then they had that game on Thursday night against UAB, so literally two football games in about 5 days under these circumstances, so we'll see.
And played in Alabama that whole time, never went back to Arkansas. UAB actually paid for their hotel, and they stayed in Birmingham. They came over from Montgomery to Birmingham and practiced in Legion Field all week. They gave them UAB has their own practice facilities, and they gave them Legion Field to practice in.
Now that you bring that up, I remember that being mentioned during the broadcast on Thursday night. So that certainly makes sense, and that is not surprising that was done. But UCA, I think they may have an off week now, but I believe they're back in action, I want to say, on the 19th. I think they play Arkansas State.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if they were one of the teams playing four games or if they're playing a full schedule.
I believe they're playing, I think it's eight or something, seven or eight.
So they're playing trying to play a full schedule. Yeah. If they play eight, I don't think they're going to be allowed to play in the spring. Yeah. But anyway, we're going to move on to Southern Miss and South Alabama, the upset of the week.
Yeah, talk about what transpired on Thursday night down at the Rock. So we're obviously kind of partial to Southern Miss because we have some Southern Miss friends, but South Alabama, I believe their coach is in his third season, and I'm trying to remember where his previous stops had been. I want to say he'd been
Central Arkansas.
Okay, yeah, he'd been at Central Arkansas, and then prior to Central Arkansas, he'd been a Division II program where he'd had a lot of success. I'm pretty sure. I don't know if it was North or West Alabama, one of those programs. But nonetheless, I mean, he had had a lot of success, but
he was successful with Central Arkansas. He had like a 12-win season when South Alabama hired him. I'm going to be honest with you, watching that game, Bubba. I think South Alabama has definitely improved. That looked a lot to me, and can't get too deep in the woods here. Don't want to get anybody in any trouble. But I'll just say what it looked like to me. Southern Miss had some COVID tests. My opinion only, Southern Miss had some COVID tests and some guys quarantined that was not reported. I don't think Southern Miss has been very transparent with their fan base about the amount of players that they perhaps had quarantined and missed practice. This is, again, just my opinion. And that looked like one out-of-shape football team, particularly on defense. Southern Miss, and I know they have some transfer issues also, which is not good for depth right now. But Southern Miss looked slow, and they got worn out at times in that game. They did make a nice little – their offense, you know, did not perform well in the red zone. I think their offense has a chance to be pretty good if they can learn to execute in the red zone. But their defense got worn out at times in that game, man. You didn't get to see it, but they looked a step slow. They were able to get pressure on the quarterback. But in the fourth quarter, when they had a chance to get a stop and get their offense the ball back, they just couldn't do it. And you're talking about USM can't stop South Alabama. And, again, I do think South Alabama's definitely improved. But that looked a lot like an out-of-shape football team to me. And I'm thinking they had some COVID issues and some guys missed practice, and it just was not reported. They kept things in-house, which, you know, you can do that. I think the only people that they're obligated to report it to is the conference. And if they don't want to release it to the media and to their fan base, that's their prerogative. So it was pretty evident. They were out of shape. They were very out of shape, Bubba. The Golden Eagles have an off week this week before they take on La Tech on the 19th.
Yeah, and that's something I was going to get to in a minute, and how they will be in action on the 19th against Skip Holtz Club. But as far as the USA is concerned, that was USA's first road win since 2017. And their quarterback, Desmond Trotter, I believe is his name, 16 out of 27 for right at 300 yards. And even though I wasn't able to tune in, I was following it via Game Tracker, and I know you were tuned in. I know he connected on multiple deep balls. And then also had some that went
– run after catch.
Went like 60 or 70 yards, run after the catch.
Yeah, their pass defense looked slow. It looked bad. It looked like an East Carolina secondary for some years. They just looked tired at times. I thought it was a great win for South Alabama. Like you said, they hadn't won since 2017. 16-point underdogs. Huge upset, really. So and that's a program that's only been playing FBS football for a handful of years. If you don't know the proximity, Mobile to Hattiesburg is like an hour and a half at most. So it's a regional rival, or has the potential to be a regional rival. I guarantee you, Southern Miss looks at them as like they want to beat them now. So South Alabama, if they wanted to create a rivalry, they did a good job beating them to start that. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I guess that off week comes at a good time for Southern Miss. They can work on some conditioning and get ready for Louisiana Tech, because that's an important game in Conference USA and a big rivalry for both programs. So kind of weird to see that game being played on week three. But
something else that stood out from that ball game is that USA was able to outrush Southern Miss. Southern Miss didn't run the football particularly well. And I know they're more pass heavy than what we were typically used to seeing out of Southern Miss down through the years. But I did see that, especially with them playing catch up pretty much that entire ball game, that Abraham, their quarterback, ended up throwing for about 320 yards, had a decent night, at least statistically. And
they have a good young running back. I can't think of his name right now. He's the son of an NFL star.
Frank Gore Jr.
Frank Gore Jr. He's good. Their O-line is not good. That's why they had trouble running the ball. Gore made some plays on his own. That's their problem with the running game is the O-line, from what I saw. They weren't getting a lot of push. But they do have a couple of good backs who can make some things happen. The issues I saw in Abraham didn't execute well in the red zone. And again, when you're struggling on the O-line, when you get down in the red zone, that's when it shows up the most. But Abraham, he looked good at times. At other times, he didn't look as good. But I think, again, I may go back to the O-line. But who would have thought we'd be sitting here talking about USM having problems with the O-line and with their defense? You wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah. We know they had those guys that opted out here just within the last couple weeks when we had our buddy Jamie Arrington on from To The Top Talk. So hopefully the Golden Eagles will get things figured out over the next couple weeks, and they'll be taking on a couple of Pirates, like you already mentioned, in their next game there at the Rock, as the Louisiana Tech Bulldogs, Skip Holtz and Joe Sloan, former Pirate holder and reserve quarterback, will be taking over at offensive coordinator for his former offensive coordinator, Todd Fitch.
Yeah, and then defensive coordinator is
David Blackwell. Yeah, so. I'm sorry. Didn't mean to leave Coach Blackwell out. Yeah, so plenty of Pirates down there in Ruston. And as far as USA is their next game is one of interest to us, as they will be taking on Tulane. That game's actually, I'm pretty sure, in Mobile at 7:30 next Saturday night.
On ESPN2. Yep. That's a damn shame we didn't get to play Marshall next weekend. When you got Tulane, South Alabama, it's a primetime game on ESPN2. You know that East Carolina Marshall game with the intrigue it has with the crash would have gotten a good TV slot. But it is what it is.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. And really, like you're saying, that this has nothing to do with our bias towards East Carolina. It just has to do with the connection between East Carolina and Marshall with the 50th anniversary of the crash. I think that would have been a no-brainer that ECU and Marshall would have been prime time on ESPN next Saturday night had it been able to be played.
If not, I think we'd have got that primetime game on ESPN2 over Tulane, South Alabama. We'd have been primetime somewhere, Bubba. If worst case to you, there are more games next weekend, and you got some ACC games. And I think a couple of Big 12 games, but I do think we would have gotten good television coverage on if we'd have been able to play.
And we'll certainly see exactly, even though it's still extremely early in the season, how much that USA team has improved taking on Willie Fritz and the Green Wave with everything Willie Fritz has done there at Tulane.
Yeah, and as you called South Alabama USA, as we had our wrestling talk the other night with Mike Mooneyham. It makes me think of the Iron Sheik. Don't say USA.
Moving on to what was supposed to be East Carolina's season opener. We were supposed to be taking on the Thunder and Herd originally on August 29th, week zero. That wasn't able to happen. Bumped it back to September 12th. That wasn't able to happen. And now it's at a date to be determined, potentially December 5th. We shall see. But as it stands right now, the Pirates will open on September 26th against UCF at Dowdy-Ficklin Stadium. But the Thundering Herd, this is a game they added very late. And not only was it good from just a competitive standpoint.
Good ad.
from an exposure standpoint, being on ESPN at 1 o'clock yesterday, the first Saturday FBS game of the season, taking on FCS foe Eastern Kentucky. As you can see there on the screen, if you did not see this ball game yesterday, 59-0 Marshall, and it was that ugly. It could have been worse. It was 38-0 at halftime. They played their reserves for probably some of the first half too. They were alternating guys in throughout, and I'm really not even sure. Grant Wells, the redshirt freshman starting quarterback for Marshall, tremendous day for him. Threw for well over 300 yards, and I think he connected on his first 8 or 9 passes for about 180 yards. Ended up throwing 4 touchdowns and didn't play very much in the second half.
Bowling shoe ugly. That was a beatdown. I don't think Eastern Kentucky's worth a flying crap. I mean, I'm being honest. Marshall's good. They're not that good. If they are, then they're going to win Conference USA. Eastern Kentucky, brand-new head coach. Guy comes over. It's Eastern Kentucky. I believe he's a Kentucky alum. He came over with quality control. He was a quality control guy for Kentucky
and Tennessee.
Yeah. He was obviously the coordinator down in South Florida, Willie Fritz's first year. Willie Fritz's first year down there. And then one of the worst offenses I've ever seen in my life. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think Eastern Kentucky is good. I think they're dreadful.
Willie Taggart.
What did I play? Willie Fritz?
Yeah.
He was offensive coordinator for Willie Taggart down in South Florida in 13. Eastern Kentucky's new head coach. And I don't think they're a good football team. I think Marshall destroyed a bad football team. Their quarterback looked good. Brand new quarterback for Marshall. Their previous quarterback, Green, got told to, you know, go find somewhere else to play. He had some personal issues there back in July. But their new quarterback looked really good. Again, I think Eastern Kentucky is dreadful. Not taking anything away from Marshall with the win. We'll find out what Marshall is in 2 weeks when they play Appalachian State. Eastern Kentucky, Bubba, is going to play a full schedule. They're another one of those programs that are not going to play in the spring. They decided to put together a schedule for the fall. And you lose 59-0 to Marshall. Well, guess what you got to do next week? You got to go play at West Virginia.
Yeah.
So, right now, if you're an Eastern Kentucky player, you're probably sick at your stomach. Definitely if you're an Eastern Kentucky fan, because it does not get any easier for the Colonials. I believe they're the Colonials. Colonels. Spelled somewhere. The Colonels of Eastern Kentucky. It does not get any easier for those guys as they go take on the Mountaineers. And I don't know. What did you think of the performance, Bubba? Did you think it was Marshall's a really good football team or Eastern Kentucky's terrible or a combination of the both?
I think it was the perfect storm, like you're saying. I think Marshall's probably going to be pretty good and be contending in Conference USA. We shall see. But I really think they probably will be a contender in Conference USA. And I think Eastern Kentucky is going to have a down year. Last year they were 7-5. And then I know last year they had played Louisville early on. And Louisville, of course, had a tremendous year. But that was before Louisville really hit its stride. Kind of still figuring things out under Coach Satterfield, and Louisville beat them 42-0. It was 14-0 at halftime in that ball game. I don't know exactly what EKU returned from last year, but they're typically a respectable FCS program. But this year, I'm afraid that may not be the case. And I say that obviously you only have even 15 or 16 FCS programs even competing this fall, but hopefully. Hopefully, Walt Wells, the new coach there at Eastern, will get things figured out, and that program will continue on. You talked about his history there. He had been there two separate times. He had, I think, a 5-year stint under the legendary EKU head coach Roy Kidd, who I believe the stadium's named after.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll have better days ahead of him. There at Eastern Kentucky, because yesterday was ugly. And like you said, will we play Marshall this year? The administration supposedly want to play the game. I don't see where there's an open week where we can play it. I do think, and as we'll talk about here in a minute, games having to be moved. Our game with them moved. TCU and SMU moved because of COVID with TCU. I think you're going to see all the conferences eventually push their championship games back to the 19th, like the SEC did. And when that happens, that'll clear up the 5th for us, December 5th, for us to play Marshall. As of right now, the only way that game gets played is if neither team is in the conference championship. And the way Marshall looked yesterday, I don't know that they might win the East Division of Conference USA. So, hopefully those championship games get pushed back to the 19th of December and we can play the Thundering Herd on December 5th.
We talked about the solid first game for Grant Wells, the Marshall quarterback. They have some tremendous skill talent around him. They had three tight ends making plays yesterday in the first half, maybe even the first quarter. And then Brendan Knox, I believe is his name, and then also McDaniel. They both had right at 100 yards rushing. Knox had a tremendous run in the first half where he moved the pile about 2 or 3 yards. It looked like a James Summers run from a few years ago where the pile just kept moving against NC State. But certainly no shortage of skill talent in Huntington. And it's going to be very interesting here before we move on from this game. And while we're still talking about the Herd, they also had a late ad picking up App State, like I've already referenced. That will be one that I'll definitely be keeping an eye on the 19th when App State travels to Edwards Stadium.
Yeah, that'll be a good game. App's got to play Charlotte next weekend to start things off before then. So App's got two big games start the season. But on the 19th, the Thunder and Herd and the Mountaineers of Appalachia State do battle. And that'll be a fun one. Unfortunately, East Carolina still won't have played a game. So as we are hopefully getting ready for game week that week, we can watch the Mountaineers and the Herd do battle.
Taking on a military academy, or one of the academies, I should say, specifically in this case, Army. Army steamrolled Middle Tennessee yesterday. And I know you were able to watch a lot of that ball game. And so Army, you said, and it looked like they were clearly in better, better shape.
The best conditioned team I saw play this weekend.
And so, as you see there on the bottom of the screen, 42-0 up at Mikey Stadium. The only people in attendance were the cadets. You know, you had 4,300 of them socially distanced throughout Mikey Stadium. But I think they ended up rushing for about 340 yards in this one. Had one drive that was something like 19 plays, 12 minutes, just absurd. And they averaged about 5.5 yards per carry against the Blue Raiders.
They wore Middle out, and that's the game I was expecting to be competitive. Middle Tennessee, I don't know if they had any COVID issues or what. I don't know what their situation was in Murfreesboro. My hunch tells me yes, that they've had to shut down some practices and had a lot of players quarantined, because not only did Middle look a step slow, similar to Southern Miss, Army looked in tremendous shape. They were flying around that whole football game, man. I'm telling you. Army was they were the most energetic looking football team I saw this whole weekend. Looked to be in great condition, and I don't know their situation, but something tells me that they were doing military conditioning back in the spring, even though they couldn't do their football stuff when other people were sitting at home, because they looked like they hadn't missed a beat. They looked great, and they got 8 home games. It could be an interesting season for the old Black Knights up in West Point. How would they treat a military academy if they went undefeated? You know, that's a whole different argument we hadn't had to have. What if a military, you know, Army goes undefeated? You're going to tell an academy you're going to be in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's Coach Munkin's done a tremendous job there in West Point. Down year last year, I think they finished 5-8, but prior to that, he'd had multiple double-digit win seasons. Really has things going up there. I really felt like last year was just kind of just one of those deals that they would be back. And if yesterday's any indication, that is certainly the case. And one of those things, I talked about how Army ran for 340 yards. They did not have anybody rush for 100 yards to show you. I think they had something crazy like 7 guys rush for right at 30 yards or more. And their leading rusher was Robinson with 9 for 94.
Well, that may be one reason they were running around with so much energy. I that's pretty good for team morale when you have that many people touching the ball. But I'm telling you, man, there was just something about their energy level yesterday that was not something I saw the rest of the weekend. I know you didn't get to see any of that game, but they look good. And like I said, it's something about their energy level that was at a whole nother level.
And up next for Army, next weekend, 1:30 game against ULM. ULM's coming to West Point. And then as far as Middle Tennessee, Middle Tennessee will be taking on Troy on September 19th following an open date next weekend.
Yeah, I believe Middle's doing a home-and-home with Troy. I believe they're going to play each other twice this year.
That is correct.
ULM better pack a lunch. From what I saw, Army looks, like I said, they look good. They look really well conditioned, and I think this is a year, particularly early on, where that's going to make a huge difference.
I'm guessing that probably meant Middle Tennessee was supposed to play Old Dominion.
Correct. Yep.
All right. Moving on. Yesterday afternoon, we also had the AAC in action for the first time this year. All right, SMU traveling down to San Marcos, about 30 miles outside of Austin, and taking on the Bobcats. Much closer than most people anticipated. The line, depending on where you looked, was anywhere from like 21.5 to 24 in this game. And certainly, I mean, this was one that was close throughout. It wasn't a matter of, you know, it was 31-7 and Texas State closed it up at the end. This was back and forth throughout. And Sonny Dykes club was able to hang on and really overcome quite a few mistakes. Shane Bouchel, a quarterback for SMU, threw a couple of picks. One which he just stared the guy down, the tight end, hooking up in the middle of the field there on a curl route. And the Mike linebacker sunk right underneath him and threw it right to him because he had some pressure on him coming right through right up A-gap right there by the center. And so, and then they also had another couple times where they turned it over on the 1 yard line going in, and then also a turnover on downs just outside the red zone. So they did plenty, not to take anything away from Texas State, because they certainly looked much improved, but it was a combination of them being much improved and SMU making some mistakes. And some of those were definitely forced mistakes.
Yeah, I think Texas State's a better ball club than they have been the last couple of years, but SMU did everything they could to give them that football game. Lots of turnovers in the red zone, didn't finish drives, some sloppy passes. SMU's going to be fine on offense. They're going to have another big year offensively. They'll quit making those mistakes. That's first game jitters. Defensively, SMU has some issues. Texas State was able to move the ball on them. Had they been playing a good football team yesterday, they'd have lost. If SMU would have been on the road, even at East Carolina, for example, I think we'd have beat them yesterday. They'd have played like that. I think Texas State's improved, but I think that was more to do with SMU making a lot of mistakes and a bad defense.
Yeah. Both teams ran the ball pretty effectively, and like you said, Texas State ran it a little better than SMU did. At least total yardage wise, and they had 189 yards yesterday rushing, and that's one of the things. Obviously, we don't play those guys until the last weekend in November, and so much can change in any year, but especially this year. But it's one of those games, especially with it being in Greenville, and hopefully being able to have some fans by then, an improved rushing attack. We hope, and that's what we hear. Chase Hayden and Demetrius Mooney, et cetera. I really like our chances in that one. At the very least, I think we'll run the ball better against them, because last year, even though we put up a ton of points and yards, a lot of it was through the air and with Holton going for about 500 yards.
Yeah, you don't know what you're going to see, but I'll say this. If it's what I saw yesterday, it'll be a shootout.
Another point about that game, I don't think we've mentioned it, and maybe we mentioned it yesterday on the Inside Slant, Dave and I did. I'm just talking about Garrett Riley, younger brother of Lincoln Riley, former coach at East Carolina as well. Garrett's the new OC there, having moved over from App State to SMU. So definitely plenty for him to get corrected. But I'm like you. I think their offense will be just fine moving forward this year, that they'll figure things out. And there was one play design right there at the end of the game. I don't know if you saw it, but, you know, Shane Bouchel was rolling to his right, and they were lined up in a set where they had two tight ends. And the tight end that was actually on the play side, and I say play side, to the strong side where they also had two receivers split out, ran a backside wheel route. It's kind of a unique play design. And Tom Luganville, longtime college football analyst, wasn't crazy about the play call itself as far as the timing of it. I liked it because
– great. He was wide open. It should have been
– yeah. Because he was talking about how it's high risk, but really he was so wide open that he was able to throw it away and get it away pretty easily without having to worry about it being picked off. And I like the aggressiveness as far as you score a touchdown there and you really seal the deal. Whereas if you play things more conservatively, have to kick close to a 40-yard field goal and you don't make it, then you're looking at being in overtime. I like the aggressiveness. What did you think?
I'd have kicked the field goal, but I have no problem with the play call. If you're going to go for it on fourth down, then was that third down?
I'm trying to remember. I think that was third down. I'm trying to remember what ended up happening, but
I swear that was fourth down. But maybe I'm wrong. If it was fourth down, I like the play call. If it was third down, I like the play call. Either way, I like the play call. You know, I don't – there was nothing wrong with that
play call. It was third down because I'm pretty sure the kicker came in and missed the field goal anyway.
Okay. I don't know. Maybe Luke thought they should have been trying to get closer for a field goal.
And that was his thinking maybe, and then also just – making Texas State using timeout. They had two at that right. time. They were trying to get them down to one timeout. Was his thinking?
Okay. Actually, I think they made the field goal. I think they went up by 10, and then they did.
You're right. 31-17.
Yeah, they went up by 10, and then anyway.
31-21. We're confused. We're confused.
Texas State came down and kicked the field goal and cut it to a touchdown.
And then had the onside kick where they had two kickers, and then the one on the left ended up kicking it, and obviously they didn't get the big hop they needed.
Yeah, the only problem with that play call it was the timeout situation. If they'd have ran the ball, they would have made SMU – SMU use another timeout. Or, excuse me, Texas State use another timeout. But in terms of the play call, no, it's great. The design of the play is what we're talking about. The design of the play was excellent. And I have no idea why that quarterback overthrew him so bad or underthrew him, whatever the case may be. He was wide open. That should have been a touchdown. Ball game would have been over.
Moving on, in the state of Texas, North Texas took down Houston Baptist 57-31. This is a game that had something like 1,300 combined yards in addition to those 88 points. So no shortage of offense there. Taking a look at this one, this is a program, North Texas, that's been pretty competitive, to say the least, in Conference USA. They've been right there playing against FAU for the Conference USA title in the recent past.
Yeah, I didn't see none of that game, but North Texas won. They got a good offense. The guy with their head coach has some UNC ties, and ties to Larry Fedora. He's done a nice job down there at North Texas, getting that program rolling. And they led big against Houston Baptist at times. Houston Baptist, I think, scored some points late to make it look a little bit better. But nice win for North Texas to start the season. People probably got to say about that one.
Yeah, like you, I wasn't able to watch any of that one. And North Texas did finish with 721 yards of total offense and 569 for Houston Baptist. Next up for the Mean Green, as I'm battling the glare on my phone here. Next up for the Mean Green, and the Eagles will be taking on SMU.
Okay.
Coincidentally, on the 19th. So that will be the next game for SMU because their game with TCU was canceled due to COVID issues for the Horned Frogs.
Yeah, Horned Frogs having to cancel that one against the Mustangs. No battle for the skillet there. They're going to try to reschedule that one again. That could be a game that could be played December 5th if these conferences would go ahead and move these championship games. Just seems like common sense to me. North Texas and SMU in a couple weeks. Should be a really good game there in the Dallas Metroplex.
And HBU will be in action next week, taking on Texas Tech. And then after that, on September 26th at La Tech. So as of right now, Houston Baptist has three games this fall. And obviously all three of those were against the FBS competition.
Yeah, and open on the 19th. It's Houston Baptist, just like East Carolina.
Yep. Coincidentally, Little Birdie told us that.
Yeah. But anyway, if we move on to what we talked about the last FBS for the game. Oh, you're all right.
We'll start here.
UTEP and Stone Cold Stephen F. Austin. And Stephen F. Austin is one of those FBS programs that's going to play a full season and this year, or this fall, rather. And they gave UTEP all they wanted last night. They were really about to take the lead in that game late. and went down and had it inside the 20 and threw a pick, and would have at least kicked the field goal and tied it, but threw a pick, and UTEP drove the ball down the field to put them away late to get the win. But UTEP struggled mightily in that game, and if they lost this one, that might have been it for Dana Holgorsen, or Dana Demel, Dana Demel, former Houston head coach. Not a pretty game. Good for UTEP for finding a way to win it, but
Like you said, you're talking about the struggles, and I think a lot of this yardage was well into this game. But I mean, they finished 364 total yards for UTEP, and they were trailing 14-3 at one point in that ball game, and that was in the first half. And Stephen F. Austin finished with just 230 yards on the evening. And then UTEP, they did have a 100-yard rusher. Deion Hankins finished with 17 carries, 413 yards, and a couple of touchdowns to lead the way for the Miners there at the Sun Bowl.
Yeah, and like I said, had Stephen F. Austin not threw that pick in the fourth, it would have been a different ballgame. They were getting ready to score on the Miners. And it is what it is. No upset there. Miners get the W, and they need it, man. They've been bad the last few years. Ain't the same UTEP program. They used to be competitive with the Pirates and put nice houses in the Sun Bowl. Like to see them get back on track. And I think Dana Demel may be looking for a job again pretty soon.
And very quickly, taking a look at what's ahead for these clubs, Stephen F. Austin, you referenced this on one of our recent podcasts, just talking about how they were scheduling any and everybody to get a fall season in. Next up for the Lumberjacks on the 19th, they are going to be taking on the Roadrunners at UTSA. And then they also have at SMU on the 26th. October 3rd, they have West Texas A&M. October 10th, they have Angelo State. So I remember when the Pirates played them in basketball back a quarter century ago.
That's a D2 school. They're not even FBS.
And that game, Angelo State – oddly enough, that game, I don't know why I remember this. It's just so unique. We played them at Rose High School because that was right there in the mid-90s when Minji's was being renovated in November, December of 1994. And then they'll also be taking on Abilene Christian and EKU. So
anybody and everybody, you're right.
Yeah, it's a seven-game schedule for the Lumberjacks. Meanwhile, what's up next for UTEP? UTEP will be in action next weekend. They have the difficult task of traveling to Austin to take on Tom Herman and the 14th-ranked Texas Longhorns. So that could be a bloodletting for sure.
Yes. I'll go Texas 700 and UTEP 3.
Final game to talk about is one that we were very tuned into with it being an American Conference opponent, or even though I say American Conference opponent, American Conference typically an opponent. Memphis taking down the Red Wolves of Arkansas State at the Liberty Bowl last night in front of about 4,500 people, 37-24. This was a really good ball game, back and forth in the first half, and then Memphis after halftime kind of seized control and opened a 17-point lead, and Arkansas State got a score there late.
Yeah, you wonder what you're watching on week one, but I'm pretty sure what I was watching was two good football teams. Memphis looked good, even without their star running back, having some issues with COVID in his family where he lost several family members and stood out the season. They still look really good in physical running the ball. Arkansas State looked good at times. I think you have a Sun Belt championship competitor in Arkansas State and a American championship competitor in Memphis. Memphis, of course, won the league last year, 12-win season, went to the Cotton Bowl. Two good football teams and a regional rivalry pretty close to Jonesboro to Memphis. And I think both these teams are going to win a lot of games this year. And Memphis – I think what you saw, the difference in that game, by the time you got to the fourth quarter, the difference between a really good American team versus a really good Sun Belt team. And Memphis pulled away and got the W over Arkansas State. And It was a pretty competitive game to watch. And like I said, did you pick up the same thing, Bubba? Did it look like two good football teams to you?
No doubt. I agree with you. I think both of these teams will be very competitive in their leagues, being right there in contention probably. With Memphis, the thing that stands out about them, I mean, you referenced Kenneth Gainwell choosing to opt out, and I did not know his family's history with COVID. Unfortunately, he's had four family members pass away as a result of COVID-19. So thoughts and prayers out to him for that, first of all, and it's certainly easy to see why he chose to opt out. But then that Memphis stable of running backs, I mean, down through the recent years, I mean, they've had just such a stable of backs where they can lose a guy the caliber of Gainwell, who had something like 2,000 yards from scrimmage last year between rushing and receiving, and then still just the beat goes on. I mean, they have a guy from Starkville, like Rodriguez Clark, and actually goes by Drake, and he had a 100-yard game last night, and certainly picked right up where Gainwell left off.
Yeah, great night rushing for the Tigers, and you know, I'm kind of glad we don't play, to be honest with you. They look really good, and I'd be honest with you, Bubba, despite it being a great game, I was getting sleepy in the second half of that game. Dozed off, woke up, dozed off, woke up, dozed off, woke up. And who does Memphis have next, and who does the Red Wolves have next?
Give me one moment. For Memphis will be in action again on September 18th, which is a Friday night, and they'll be taking on Houston there at the Liberty Bowl.
Should be going.
So that will be 7:30, I'm sure, ESPN, obviously, with it being on a Friday night. And then also for the Red Wolves, will be in action. They'll be in Manhattan taking on K-State on this coming Saturday at 3:30. So I'm going to see that matchup. So
yeah, Kansas State hasn't played yet. Don't sleep on Arkansas State, Kansas State. That's interesting.
And obviously Blake Anderson has done a tremendous job there. I heard a statistic last night that the Red Wolves have been to bowl games now for 9 consecutive seasons. And going back to when they had, you know, 4 coaches in 4 seasons, the second of those 4 coaches, you know, was, of course, Hugh Freeze, and then Gus Malzahn, and then Brian Harsin, who's now his alma mater, Boise State. So each of those 3 years, a couple of which John Thompson at least was the interim head coach for the bowl game and picked up a victory at least one of those occasions, if not both. And then you've had some stability now with Blake Anderson coming over after having been offensive coordinator at North Carolina. And it's great to see good guys like him have success, him going through everything he went through with his wife being lost to breast cancer.
Yeah, no doubt. And their AD's done a hell of a job hiring coaches one after another, made an all-star hire every time. Got them a press box built on a budget got nice facilities in Jonesboro now. An up-and-coming program. Arkansas State is a program, you know, and then, like you said, stability under Blake Anderson and all he's been through, losing his wife and his father. Up and coming program that really didn't have anywhere to go, unfortunately. I you know, this is another topic for another time. I think not the American Conference USA and the Sun Belt should kind of form 2 new leagues. I really think they should get more regional with those 2 leagues, and you could have some leagues that make geographical sense. To me, there's no advantage in being in Conference USA or the Sun Belt one over another anymore. There used to be. Conference USA used to be way superior to the Sun Belt. Not anymore. You could have Arkansas State playing in the same league with a UTEP and a Rice, for example, versus the same league with Appalachian State and Georgia State. I mean, you could make things make a lot more sense. But that's neither here nor there. That's a conversation for the off season, Bubba.
Couple other notes before we begin to wrap things up. Taking a look at this game, as far as Arkansas State is concerned. You actually brought this to my attention. I had not realized this, but they had Fresno State's Mountain West Conference Defensive Player of the Year from last year. Justin Rice is his name. So Justin Rice came over to Arkansas State. So what a late ad for them with the Mountain West not playing this fall. So that's something to keep an eye on and see how that young man does and see if he's the defensive player of the year in the Sun Belt at year's end.
Greenville, can you imagine waking up one morning and suddenly you have the Mountain West defensive player of the year on your team with immediate eligibility?
Absolutely.
I wonder how the hell he chose Arkansas State. I wonder if there's some assistant coach there with ties to Fresno or what. But
it certainly makes you wonder.
Yeah, good choice. Nothing wrong with Arkansas State. Good program. Maybe that's what he was just looking for. Maybe,
yeah, just kind of random.
Yeah. Well, maybe they just had a need at linebacker and he saw that they were a winning program and decided to go there. But it's a hell of a situation. One day you don't, and the next day you have a stud linebacker that's, I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, I'm going to research, see where the young man's originally from, and maybe that had something to do with it. But also for Arkansas State, their situation, yeah, they made some mistakes, but their situation at quarterback, they're in excellent shape there. They have two guys that are very capable in Lane Hatcher and Logan Bonner.
Yeah, they do. And, again, I think that's more credit to Memphis being a good football team than anything wrong with Arkansas State. Memphis has recruited really well in recent years. And, like I said, if I was Kansas State, I'd be ready. And let me tell you something. If they're not ready, with Arkansas State already having a game under their belt, man, Kansas State, it's going to be interesting to see. I wouldn't be surprised to see Arkansas State get off to a fast start next weekend.
Johnny Gardner is chiming in. He said, wish they would have played a couple of those games from yesterday, or wish they wouldn't have played a couple of those games from yesterday so we could have had some viewing options today leading into tomorrow night's BYU-Navy game.
Yeah, normally you do have on week one a Sunday college football game because no NFL yet, then there isn't one today. I'm kind of a little surprised at that also, Johnny, that they didn't decide to. Probably just because of lack of inventory, they decided not to do that. There just weren't a lot of games to show yesterday. But it is what it is. We're going to get a day of no football before we get to see the midshipmen and the Cougars of BYU doing battle.
Taking a look at next week's games, we've already talked about App State and taking on Charlotte up in Boone next weekend. Unfortunately, no fans will be in attendance for that one with the laws here in the state of North Carolina.
Come on, Governor Cooper. Let some damn fans go to football games. I'm begging you, baby. Just if you don't want to do 20%, at least give us 10%. Give us something. Something. Come on. Help us out. Help these players out. Give us something. If you can't socially distance 5,000 fans, if we were at 10% in a 50,000 stadium, I don't know what to tell you.
So that ball game is one to definitely keep an eye on. I certainly will be. Another one, and that Thursday night matchup that we've already referenced with UAB traveling down to take on Miami.
Another one, no fans. Notre Dame at Wake Forest. No fans.
Yep. And that game was recently moved from Bank of America Stadium to BB&T Field in Winston-Salem, which certainly makes sense with no revenue coming in from tickets, concessions, and so forth. Why are you gonna play in a 75,000 seat stadium and pay to use that 75,000 seat stadium? So definitely no reason not to move it to BB&T Field.
No fans yet. College game day is going to be there.
strange times. Some of the other games, in addition to the two we've already mentioned, another in-state club, North Carolina. A lot of high expectations this year from Tar Heels after a mixed bag a season ago and Mac Brown's return. They are ranked 18th. And they will be taking on Syracuse at Keenan Stadium. Also, you have number 23, Iowa State, another ranked team in action, playing their first game of the season, taking on the Raging Cajuns out of the Sun Belt next week in Ames.
Originally said fans, then James Germana said no fans. I think there was a I don't know this for a fact, but the statement from the AD sounded like to me that some of the fans had implied they weren't going to go by the rules with tailgating. So their AD said, all right, guess what? For game one, you won't get to come at all. So no fans for the Rajon Cajon and Iowa State. I'll see if Iowa State changes their mind after game one and allows fans because initially they were.
several other games involving in-state programs next week. You also have number 10, Notre Dame, hosting Duke at 2:30. You have Campbell playing one of their games and traveling down to Georgia Southern to take on the Eagles. You also have Wake Forest in action. Not an easy task for the Demon Deacons. They get to start their season with number 1 Clemson.
Yeah. Is that at Clemson or is that in Winston-Salem?
That is in Winston-Salem.
Okay, so they get Clemson and Notre Dame back-to-back weeks, and don't get fans for either one of them. And, Jesus. Wake Forest will get a rude awakening as they take on the Clemson Tigers next weekend.
Some other intriguing games. We've already talked about how we think Arkansas State at K-State. That could be one to keep an eye on in terms of a potential upset. Another one that could be a potential upset, I think it's worth keeping an eye on, is La Tech at Baylor. First game for that staff at Baylor. Excellent staff there at Baylor, where it also includes Coach Aranda is the head coach, but then you have Larry Fedora as offensive coordinator, and I'm trying to remember who the defensive coordinator hire was.
Already talking Hattiesburg of time to get rid of Hobson and bring back Fedora.
But La Tech will get underway, yeah, and understandably so. And that I wouldn't blame them at all for trying to bring back Coach Fedora. But with La Tech, and they'll get things underway with their season, kick things off with the Bears before traveling to Hattiesburg the following week. Some other games of interest, you have Georgia Tech and Florida State playing. So that one's in Tallahassee with the debut for Mike Norvell. And then you also have one of American interest. We've already talked about Tulane and South Alabama, but listen to this one. You have Tulsa traveling to Stillwater to take on number 15, Oklahoma State.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I may call Georgia Tech over Florida State as my upset of the week.
And one other game I wanted to mention, and this is one you saw Coastal Carolina go into Lawrence and defeat Kansas a year ago. And those two teams square off again this coming weekend on September 12th. And it's a 10 o'clock kickoff on FS1. So that's one I will definitely be watching late next Saturday night.
I'm going to go ahead and say that Kansas they played a lot better football as the season went on under Les Miles. And I'm going to go on and predict Coastal will not beat Kansas 2 years in a row.
I agree with you. I think that Coastal will probably compete for a while, but I think Kansas will end up winning that ball game and getting a little bit of revenge on the Chanticleers. So there you have some of the action. Recapping week one, also a brief look ahead to week two. Join us either next Friday night or Saturday morning. We'll be promoting that toward the middle of the week, and we hope to catch up with Adam Witten, the play-by-play voice of the App State Mountaineers, and to talk about that Charlotte matchup. And then we'll have some other beat writers and sports directors and so forth as well as we take a look at week two of college football. Before we get out of here, Kyle, do you have anything before we wrap things up?
No, just be interesting to see. Tuesday is the next media availability for Coach Houston for a post-Zoom practice press conference. Hopefully we'll have a good practice Tuesday, and we'll see how the situational scrimmage went this past Saturday. That unfortunately had no coverage inside Dowdy Pickle Stadium. Be interesting to see how that played out. And we got one more scrimmage, Bubba. We're going to scrimmage next Saturday, and that's going to be it. It'll be traditional fall practice for the rest of the way as we head into UCF.
Yeah. Like Coach Houston had mentioned on Thursday, yesterday we had a closed to the media, controlled scrimmage with the officials, as so often is the case, but not a full-scale scrimmage like we typically have just because of the conditioning issues and so forth. And, getting back to action after the week and a half pause. But one of the things that I'm interested to see is that initial depth chart at a lot of positions, but particularly backup quarterback. Is it going to be Mason Garcia, or is it going to be Ryan Stubblefield, who I really like as well out of Texas? I think Stubblefield is kind of a dark horse in a lot of people's eyes to win that backup job to Holt Naylor.
Yeah, quarterback room's up the talent, for sure.
And that's certainly no inside knowledge or anything or nothing against Mason Garcia but we'll just put it this way. The quarterback position is in excellent position from everything we know and hear about East Carolina with Mason Garcia, Ryan Stubblefield, et cetera, behind Holt Naylor. But if you don't have anything else, Kyle, we'll go ahead and get out of here. We appreciate you tuning in, whether it was via Facebook or YouTube Live. Also, if you're going back and listening via any one of our number of platforms, be it TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, et cetera, we appreciate you tuning into the show. But for Kyle Barber, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to the Sports Objective Podcast, College Football Playback, all on Facebook and YouTube. Until next time, take care and go Pirates.